So I'm joined by Gavin Kennedy. Thanks for coming in, Gavin.
Thank you, Glenn. Appreciate it.
And Gavin is the director of the Finnegan's Wake film project. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. So first of all, I guess, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved in this?
I'm from Athlone, about 4 miles outside Athlone, a place called Glasson on the westerly bank of the River Shannon. I've been living in the States for the last 20 plus years. I had an experience when I was 1995. I was in Norway, and it's the first time I had ever dipped into Joyce. I was reading Dubliners, and just had a funny experience while reading it, and I suppose you could say it was the first time in my life that I kind of realised that I might not be in the driving seat, you know. So
what was the epiphany? What was the specific part of the book or the specific story that made you feel like that?
Well, I'd have to give you a bit of a background. When I was 16, I came to college in Dublin, and my mother put me in the Opus Dei hostel on the corner of Ely Place and Hume Street. You know, I'd be safe with the priest. But I remember I walked into the room the first day I came up, and I was the first up, and it's right. If you were to walk out the back door of Donoghue's pub on Marion Row, you'd be looking at the back of the Opus Dei hostel. It's on the junction of Hume Street and Ely Place. And I walked into this room, there was three beds along one wall, and then there was this huge bay window in the corner of the room, which actually jutted out into the intersection of Ely Place and Hume Street. And there was a bed in there, and if you lay back in the bed, if you looked out the left window, you looked straight into Stephen's Green. And if you looked out the right window, you looked straight into Merrion Square, you know, across Baggot Street. So I lay into this bed and I thought, this will suit me grand. You know, up from the country, and you know, there's probably not a room in Dublin like it. Roommates came that night, hopped into bed, pulled the curtains, got into bed, and this bay window was still lit up like a lighthouse, a beacon lighthouse. So I looked outside, there was an orange street lamp about 3 yards from the window, could be 1,000 watt orange fluorescent. Put the head under the blanket, still orange. Close the eyes, still orange. Didn't get a wink of sleep that night. 2 nights later, into bed again. Couldn't get to sleep. About 3 o'clock, I drift off, and the next minute I hear this buzzing, like bzzz, like a bee in your ear. I'm like, what is going on here? Open the window. Raining outside. There was a short in the light. So every time it rained, not only did it light up the room, but it was buzzing like a train. So I had 9 months to think of my own greed in grabbing this bed where I didn't get a sleepless night or a calm night's sleep. And a few years later, went into Dubliners, was hitchhiking around Norway. I climbed down, the truck driver dropped me off about 5 miles outside this small village called Sauda, western coast of Norway. Climbed down this ravine, this cliff face, overlooking a fjord, utterly beautiful. Was going through Dubliners, and I was at a story called Two Gallants, and ironically named Two Gallants, they're two gobshites, looking for money to get drunk in Dublin. But the story ends with them walking down Baggot Street towards Stephen's Green. And Corley and Lennon, and they had just gotten a girl that one of them was shifting to steal from her owner. And they're walking back down Baggot Street, and they reach the corner of Ely Place. And it says, Corley swerved left and went up a side street. And I'm thinking, you're coming down Baggot Street, you take a left on Ely Place. He halted at the first lamp and stared grimly before him. Then with a grave gesture, he extended a hand towards the light and, smilingly, opened it slowly to the gaze of his disciple. A small gold coin shone in the palm. And I thought to myself, hold on here now. First left in Ely Place. I said, as soon as I get off the plane in Dublin, I'm heading straight over. So, followed the footsteps, took the left on Ely Place, the first lamp. There's only one lamp on that 50 yards. And it made me think, of all the lampposts that I've ever passed in my world, there's only one that I have a personal animosity towards that I wanted to. I had images of, you know, getting a catapult and knocking this light out of the world. And this is the one that Corley stops under, extends his hand to smilingly, and in it shone a gold coin. So that's where Joyce began for me. I said, there's something going on here.
Well, yeah. Or as Corley would say, that emphatically takes the biscuit, doesn't
Absolutely,
he?
Absolutely, spot on. Emphatic recherche, the recherche biscuit.
That's right, yeah. So from there, obviously, you had now made this connection. And did you conceive this project? Did someone come to you with the idea? Did
What happened was, on that cliff, like 16 hours later, I crawled off that cliff and I had 8 what are called synchronicities. And I don't think I had a synchronicity in my life before that point. So this is where you know what I mean? Time to call the man with the butterfly net, you know what I mean? Heading into stuff that just doesn't make, you know, Newtonian, Cartesian, logical sense. But I made a commitment to get to the end of this Joyce character, which is kind of ironic because Finnegan's Wake is at the end and there's no end to Finnegan's Wake. The last line comes into the first. But my, I suppose, psychological makeup, I would be pathologically incapable of reading through. I mean, it took me 3 years to get through Ulysses. It was only the audio version by RTE that finally revealed itself to me, and that blew my mind. Like Donald McCann and all those great actors of the 60s, 70s in Ireland came together and did the Ulysses thing. And I charged into Finnegan's Wake a couple of times with the greatest determination and got utterly rejected. So finally I decided to listen to an audio version by Pat Healy. And I listened to it, and I didn't even listen to it, I just played it in the background, and I noticed that it had a significant impact. Just listening to it ambiently, it had an impact on how I felt. And it wasn't necessarily the words that were coming out across the audio. It just seemed to change my mood. It brought up associations in my thought process. I suppose you could say it is a kind of a consciousness altering effect. You know what I mean? And
that was just listening passively. You weren't engaged.
I was writing emails, I was making dinner, you know what I mean, I was answering phone calls. It was just, I was listening, not listening. You know, not paying attention, letting it drop into, I mean, it's the book of the night, it's the book of dreams, it's the book of the unconscious. I wasn't listening consciously, but by my own failure of not being able to read it, I somehow, this is in retrospect, I think I allowed it to drop in behind my conscious mind, you know what I mean? And that's where Joyce plays, especially with Wake.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So from then, making that kind of connection to Wake, you felt there was stuff there to mine for you as a visual art. Would you call it visual art?
You could call it visual, audio, theatre, performance. You know what I mean? It's all there. It's all there. But I had somewhere between, I was listening to Chapter 7, and I had another very strange coincidence. And it was so profound that I, the message of Finn, of Shem the Penman, is we are all creative beings, whether we know it or not, and that to create art is the most life-affirming thing that one can do. So go create art. I wouldn't regard myself as an artist. I'm asking people to read a book, and I'm pressing record, but it's as close as I can get to it, you know. So I went out to Burning Man and to record an audio version of Shem the Penman for an audio project that was been run by a friend of mine called Derek Pyle, called Waywards and Mean Signs, and mm-hmm. he had musicians from around the world write a piece of music to people reciting it in audio.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually doing my thesis in documentary film and psychology at the time, and I had a project to do, a video project to do, and I thought, hold on here now, this could be interesting. Burning Man, great backdrop. I'll bring a camera and I'll record it. And that was the genesis of the project.
Well, okay, so kind of, I guess, by happenstance, you ended up recording it with your camera.
Utterly, utterly.
And then when did it develop into you deciding that it was going to be something, I guess, that's a passion for you?
Yeah, yeah. When I came back with Chapter 7 from Burning Man, I had shared, so everyone who performs a page to their chosen piece of music which has had an impact on their life, I load it to YouTube and I send it to them. And also I do an edit of the chapter, so you have the whole chapter from beginning to end. So what you're hearing in audio is not just the person's voice, but the music that they're listening to in their ear, which has had an impact on them, whilst they're bringing that melody and that lilt to the deliverance of the page. This is what Joy said. He said, don't listen to Wake, read it and listen for the lyric. Listen for the lyric in the word. So this is kind of the music that has an impact on you. It invokes the lyric into the words, I sent it out to everyone who performed, which was about 110 performances the first time, and a lot of people came back and said that these are seasoned people who have been going to Burning Man for 15-20 years, and they're saying things like, I don't understand why, but that is the most impactful experience I have ever had at Burning Man. And then I realised that what Wake was doing to them was the same thing that it was doing to me, which was, it was dropping into a deeper level that we're not normally in touch with and making people feel something, not understand something, making people drop into a little bit of a lower level of, or a little bit of an altered state, mm-hmm. of feeling something, you know, which is, I suppose it's the goal of all stories.
Yeah. And through your time of making these recordings, have you found, obviously, does people engage with it on different levels? What, like, I heard you talking about different kinds of readers. Can you explain a little bit about that to us?
It depends if I'm recording. I mean, I was recording at the James Joyce Symposium in Antwerp, and it's all Joyceans. Now, we always, whenever we do a shoot, we always do it in a public place, so we have completely innocent people walking down the street can come over, we put the book in front of them, say, name a tune, and we hook them up. They've never heard of, some of them haven't even heard of Joyce. In a place like Burning Man, I would say 40% of performers would have heard of Joyce. Half of those would have heard of Finnegan's Wake. And we've done about 600 recordings of Burning Man, and there, I would guess there's maybe 7 or 8 who have attempted Wake. There's 2 who got through it all the way. One is a professor of English. He was actually able to recite it by heart, some pages. Yeah. But a key element of it is the spontaneity of, it seems the more they know about the book, I mean, if you show them the book beforehand and they start to read the page, it destroys their performance, because they have such a buildup of anxiety. about getting this page right on camera that they forget about the music in their ear.
Yeah.
And it's a way. So it's, I mean, every shoot I do, I learn something. And the key thing is, do not let the performer see the book or the page before they perform.
Yeah. Excuse me. Well, I know I took part recently in the James Joy Centre, and there was definitely a sense of anxiety in the build up to sitting down with the book that, you know, is all everyone also always talks about how kind of impenetrable it is. And
but I'll tell you, Glenn, now your prep was a particularly intimidating prep because you're in the James Joyce Centre on the 80th anniversary of Finnegan's Wake. You're surrounded by Joycean academics, Joycean experts who know the book inside out, and you're sitting there for an hour and a half listening to us talk about it beforehand. So you knew you were up for the chop, and there's nothing relaxing about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a tremendously difficult ask.
Yeah, you know absolutely.
I mean? To be left hanging beforehand, you know.
And you find, obviously, the space where you conduct the recordings has a big impact on the actual recordings, on the performances.
It does. But what has a greater impact is that everybody is coming. So it's the spread of people. You have 100 people at Burning Man, 100 people in Antwerp at a Joyce convention, 100 people in the James Joyce Centre. You have a span of people there. Here comes everybody. You know what I mean? It doesn't really matter where you are. It's raw, naked humanity in its full glory. Do you know what I mean? So you don't know what Leopold Bloom is going to turn up in front of the mic and deliver.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I think it's a fascinating project, and I really enjoyed being part of it, even though I was nervous and I was...
You did a grand page. I just edited it there a couple of
days. What's the ultimate goal with the project?
I want to create a version of Wake that is accessible enough that even someone like me that can't get through 5 pages of the actual text can be drawn into it and allowed to swim, float on the utter genius of Joyce. So I want to do a full length, the entire book, which is going to be about 35 hours long, chapter by chapter. And I want to deliver it in the format of every 20 seconds of text, the performer changes. So I saw a documentary about a year and a half ago on BBC, and they were analysing the attention span of an average 20-year-old in 1979 was a minute and 21 seconds.
Okay.
And in 2017, it was 12 seconds.
Really? Wow.
This is statistically, you know what I mean, able to focus on...
Fully engage with something.
You know, for that period of time. And I remember looking at it and going, you know, I want to wake the world. I want the average person who has no interest in literature. People don't even read books. The average 20-year-old doesn't read a book. And you know what I mean? Maybe 5% of them pick up a book. You know, I don't read books hardly. So I'm trying to think. For me, there's nothing as compelling as the divine work of art, which is the human being. You know what I mean? And when they're on camera performing a page of Wake spontaneously, I find it hugely compelling. These people have had the courage to step up, the courage to fall, the courage to fail, the courage to be vulnerable, the courage to dive into the unknown on camera on this high arts book. You know what I mean? And you can see it in the performance. You know what I mean? You can see this place where people don't normally go in everyday life. They're wide, wide open. You know what I mean? And that human being is changing every 20 seconds. So I want to do the entirety of Finnegan's Wake in this format. They're listening to a piece of music which has had an emotional impact on their life, so they're opening up straight away. You know what I mean? We normally have a very compelling background, you know, visual background. We'll shoot on streets, plazas, squares, Burning Man, festivals, that kind of thing. So I've this kind of idea, you know, maybe when kids in school or in college come home on a Friday night at 2 a.m, and they kick back in front of a TV, you know, maybe they mightn't watch The Big Lebowski or The Blues, you know what I mean? Maybe they might watch this mad stuff here. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But look, and they just lie back on the sofa, and every 20 seconds, a new human being emotionally open and vulnerable and Wake's message seeps in. And I think if I could provide a portal for Wake to sneak in the door, it'll set its hook, and Wake could become a very popular book.
Yeah, obviously, I think it's an amazing idea, and I think, you know, I would love to even just jump in and out of that final piece, you know, and just see, like you said, the vulnerability, the whole gamut of human emotion and fear and everything, like, you know. So what I was going to ask you was that I love the freeness of the project, where, like you said, that, you know, people just come and you don't know who's going to show up and what they're going to be like and what they're going to sound like. But I think for me, and I don't know too much about the book, but that freeness seems like it has a natural connection to the book. I don't know if that's correct or...
For me, I mean, I have to make this very clear. When I talk about the book, I'm only talking about my experience of it and how it seems to me, how it makes me feel. I have no objective understanding of the book whatsoever. You know, I know there's a storyline there. I only understand the storyline by people who write, you know, who've done the analysis of every word by word kind of thing.
Yeah.
But for me, it's the book of the night. Leopold Bloom is the book of the day, the book of stream of consciousness. We're talking here about the book of the night. It's a dream from beginning to end. It's the book of the unconscious. Well, the book of the unconscious means the lad in the driver's seat is not home. The person you think you are is gone away. The shopkeeper is out from behind the counter. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, in contemporary society, if you're going around with the shopkeeper not behind the counter, you're in serious trouble. You're not paying your bill, you know what I mean?
Yes.
You get eaten up. Yeah. You become homeless. You might become addicted. You become marginalised. You go to the fringes. You know, you're not a successful hunter and gatherer if you're allowing yourself to slip into this zone. But this zone is the home of creativity. It's the home of inspiration. It's the home of epiphany. You know what I mean? But our society doesn't welcome that, doesn't allow that anymore. Mm-hmm. You're marginalised. You know what I mean? If you drop into that area...
So, obviously, you have your ultimate goal of having a full film by the end of this. Have you given yourself a timeline?
I have just over 800 pages recorded so far. It's going to take about 9,000 performances.
Wow.
Yeah, so I need 15 performances a page. And there's 628 pages in it. So I've been 2 years... Well, you see, I'm only beginning to build up steam.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I'm beginning to try and take it a bit more seriously right now. I'm going to the North American Conference in Mexico on the 12th of June, and then I'm going straight from there to the European Conference in Trieste in Italy. But as we progress, more and more people become interested, and they're like, okay, I can put 100 people together for you here to do a shoot. You know what I mean? So now I'm just beginning to get a little bit of traction where it's building momentum. And I would like to be knocking out, look at, Joy spent 17 years writing it. I'd certainly like to do it before 17 years, but I would like to knock out 1,000 pages a year, you know, which would be 10 shoots.
Yeah.
10 shoots of 100 performances. And I can do about, the only rule we have, the only rule that I abide by in honour of Joyce's intention is that we only shoot from the moment the sun sets to the moment the sun rises. And that's the only thing we abide by. And it's caused trouble. It's caused problems. Yeah. I mean, in this Mexico convention, I mean, so the program ends at, well, I'm giving a presentation on the opening day, but the program ends at 7.
but I'm sorry, but I can't shoot before, so, you know what I mean, they're bringing me out there and they're saying, and I'm saying, sorry, I can't shoot before sundown. I said, yeah. Oh, okay, we'll set up your location from, so at 9:11 p.m. is sundown on June 15th, the day before Bloomsday.
Wow.
Yeah, so 9:11 we're going to start rolling in Zona Rosa in Mexico City.
Fantastic. And you've taken it all over the world. You've been in, I heard you mention Anderlecht, was it Ukraine as well? You've been?
Yeah, but done a shooting in Kiev, Ukraine. We try to go to cities that are mentioned, river cities that are mentioned in the book. So we've done Kiev, Ukraine, Antwerp, did Trivandrum, the south of India, a couple of months ago. We try to do Burning Man every year. It's a tough dose because you're 10 days in the desert without facilities, electricity, anything. So Mexico and Trieste next month. Did a few shoots in Addis Ababa last month. So you know we're trying to spread it as wide as possible. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And as a, obviously you're a creative person, I know you mightn't identify as an artist, but I'm trying. But has doing this like opened other doors for you? Has other projects kind of sprung from this?
I mentioned to you earlier, a lot of people have come back to me and said, specifically within the Burning Man community, a lot of people come back and they're creatives already, you know what I mean? And they might be creatives in the advertising industry or graphic design or something like that. And they say to me that, wow, I come to a block and I listen to a page or two pages a week, or I read it, and it seems like it just resets me and I fall into a flow. But people come back all the time with ideas. A lady who read 2 weeks ago at the UCD conference, her name is Debi Anit Africa. She has won the Canadian National Poet Award, quite well known, is on a European tour right now. Mm. And she has proposed that we do a documentary of her dive into the Anne Olivia chapter 1-8. So she wants to perform the entire chapter to her 20, it's 20 pages, so to 20 pieces of music that have had an impact on her life, and also to do a documentary on this journey that she's going to take within her creative line of work, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Going into Anne Olivia, so.
It sounds fascinating, and I think it could actually even open up a whole another element for yourself where you get a different artist to do each chapter even, or, you know, the world could really open up.
It's funny you say it. What Wake has taught me is, well, you know Anne Olivia is the Liffey.
Mm-hmm.
It's, this river is going to flow. I just need not to get in its way, you know what I mean? And if I don't try to force it, if I don't try to push it, as I said to you, I've only one rule: no shooting between sunrise and sunset. The sun has to be out of the sky. And every different shoot, I tweak it, what we're doing, how we're going about it. I mean, at one stage there, I was emphasizing that people choose a piece of music that was wordless. I mean, we're dealing with enough words here as it is, you know? And I began to realize, if I was to say to myself, find a wordless tune that has had an impact on your life, well, that's not an easy thing to do.
It's difficult.
On the spot. Mm. I mean, if you're given a day, but I'm asking people to come up with this in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a tough one.
Yeah, it is.
You know what I mean? So I get, there's a lot of the same tunes come up, you know, again and again, like, you know, really well-known stuff. You know, like Arvo Pärt's, that one with the, I forget the name of it. But there's a few that come up, because it's a tough thing to ask somebody. So I'm like, you know what? I'll just say, what is that tune that has had an emotional impact on your life? Words are wordless, doesn't matter. And that tune is going to nail them.
Yeah.
Every time. There's a reason they love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it makes them feel something.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't have to think too long about what that tune is.
Mm-hmm.
It's there, it's in there. So this is only in the last 3 months, I actually said, hang on. The words in the tune doesn't matter that much, because I have it's kind of low in the final mix on the film. I can keep it low, you know what I mean? But it seems to be, so as I said, my challenge is to not get in the way of it. And I utterly trust that Wake is going to take care of itself. That Wake, that Joyce is going to take care of this project. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm just hanging on by the tail.
So I guess, is there a natural end to this? Does it end? Is it?
Great question. Well, of course, the book doesn't end because the last line returns to the first.
Is it the same with the project?
Well, here's, you see, I've been asked this question a couple of times. My idea is that when we get up the final version, the final full 17 chapters, online, there will be a web page. And anyone in the world, everybody, here comes everybody, the only thing they'll need is a phone and Wi-Fi, can record themselves performing a page to their chosen piece of music, and they can actually upload themselves into that final online version where they become the hero for a portion of Finnegan's Wake, and they would replace the previous person, the oldest version, the oldest copy of that particular section. So it's life and death, which is what Wake is all about.
It's flowing.
You know what I mean? It's flowing. You know, from death comes life. Joy, I love in Wake, Joyce represents this. He spells the word corpse. He spells it C-R-O-P-S-E, crops. You know, there's a great Heaney poem about Vinegar Hill. It's called Requiem for the Crappies.
Mm-hmm.
And these crappies were running around the hills of Wexford with grain in their pockets because they didn't have time to strike camp.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were slaughtered on Vinegar Hill, shaking scythe at cannon.
That's right, yeah.
And he says, terrorists, thousands died. And the last line is something like, and in May, the barley grew up out of the graves, the barley in their pockets. Well, it fed on their body, on their decomposing body, fresh food for worms. Mm. You know what I mean? So this, from life springs death. So I think it'll be kind of nice to incorporate that into a film.
I love it as an idea. I think it's great. Yeah,
so and the whole world, anyone who's, sorry, but yeah, I'm excluding people who don't have a cell phone somewhere, but you know, can contribute. So it's a living, breathing, pulsating thing that's changing all the time. Mm. And somebody can send a link and say, hey, Mom, look at me, I'm in Finnegan's Wake. You know what I mean? And it's up there as the for everyone to see. Fantastic. But it's changing, you know, it's changing, breathing, revitalizing all the time.
I can't wait to see where the project goes. I'm really fascinated and I'm invested now.
Good man, good man.
So
help me out, Glenn. I'll tell you, we it's got to be us that does this.
Let's
you
do know it, I mean? Yeah,
I'm
yeah,
just trying to get her off the ground.
Is there websites that people can go and check out and stuff?
There is. It's finneganwakes.com. And I see, this is another challenge. The book is called Finnegan's Wake.
Mm-hmm.
That's the name of the book, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me hold on, let me check.
And the project is called Finnegan Wakes. And the implication, of course, is Finnegan is every man.
Mm-hmm.
Finnegan is humanity. You know, you are Finnegan. And the purpose of the book is that humanity wakes up to this. You see, you're in dangerous ground here. We'll wake up what? You know, what's the illusion? You know, but we'll leave that up to yourself.
Great. Well, it's been a pleasure chatting to you. And like I said, I can't wait to see where this project goes. And yeah, sure, I'll be involved. I'll stay involved. And sure, let's go. Let's do it.
I have that on tape. I'm serious, Glenn. Much appreciated.
Thanks a million, Gavin.
All right, great stuff.